You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Hello and welcome into the 9th episode of the Coast to Coast Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Austin Craycraft, and I'm joined, as always, by Dante Guarneri. How are we doing today, Dante?
A little bit better than the end of this weekend, getting my voice back finally, so happy to do this last one.
That's good to hear. We're recording this Monday afternoon, evening-ish. In about 24 hours, we'll actually have real NBA basketball to watch and discuss, so we're very excited to hear that. We're going to end this preseason preview series with just an overall NBA preview. We've gone through all 6 divisions already. If you want to go back and go listen to those, you can find them at Last Word on probasketball.com and on our Twitter at Coast to Coast Pod. But today we're going to start with our 3x3, which is just going to be 3 questions and 3 answers for each of us, just to kind of get the first week of the season rolling. And then we're going to end with some power rankings and our MVP and finals picks. So you ready to go, Dante?
Born ready.
So our first 3x3 question is, who are some of your guys this season? That in quotes, of course. Just some guys that you think you are higher on than most other people are. Who's your first one?
It's interesting. For my first one, I'm going a few guys as part of my first guy. I'm going to trust the process here, and I'm going to talk about Joel Embiid, Dario Saric, and Ben Simmons. Hopefully we get to see Simmons by the end of the season. But I'm really excited to see how this group and how this process is finally coming together. It's part of this 5 to 10 year build that the 76ers have begun and are in the middle of. We've seen so much this offseason of Joel Embiid and his antics, and we've gotten to see a lot of Saric and his abilities in the Olympics, and getting to see any bit of Simmons has been exciting. So I think this group, and at least for the near term, it's very exciting and very positive for the Philly fan base.
Embiid's actually my number 2 guy on this list. I'm just so excited to see him play. He was so hyped up coming into that season. He could have been the number 1 pick if he didn't have those health concerns ahead of Wiggins and Jabari Parker. And he brings so much fun and life to the NBA. He's already nicknamed himself the Process. He's gonna finally be a real NBA player, which is exciting just for the Sixers fans just to watch, not having to kind of suffer through what we've seen the last few years. Brett Brown actually has a few toys to play with, like you mentioned with Saric, and we actually got a report the other day that Simmons might be back by January, which is exciting to hear. That means we might get to see half a season or so of him, which is more than we originally thought. So this Sixers team is going to be at least watchable this year, and I'll certainly have them near the higher up on my league pass rankings than I originally thought. So who's your second guy, Dante?
My second guy is Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, actually, out of Charlotte. Only got to play 7 games last year, but he's really, really tried to improve his shot and everything that's been said about his shot since coming out of Kentucky 4 years ago. Just in the 7 games last year, of course, a small sample size, but he was he had an uptick in minutes. He was shooting better. He was averaging more points than he normally did at 13 points a game compared to the 9 in his career. He's getting to play probably with one of his more talented offensive teams. It's going to open up a lot of room for him. And obviously the defense is still existent for him, and that's his main focus as an NBA player. So I'm really, really hoping, especially for Charlotte here, if Charlotte wants to be good, they have to win through their number their wing player, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, who's going to be playing alongside the likes of Batum and Kemba.
Yeah, I'm excited to see him come back. I actually saw a Vine probably right before we were starting this of his new jump shot, and it's pretty weird.
Yeah, it's super strange. The corner 3 one?
Yeah.
Super weird.
Describing it over a podcast probably isn't the way to do it. If you want to, go and seek it out. It's probably not too hard to find on the Twitter sphere. But yeah, it should be exciting to see him play. He's going to have to replace some of the production that the Hornets lost in Jeremy Lin and Courtney Lee, and I think he will be able to do that excellently. And Clifford just kind of adds another piece to that dynamic defense. My number two guy is Rodney Hood, the wing player from Utah. I expect him to have a little bit of a better year than he's had in the last few years. He averaged 14 points a game last year with three rebounds, two assists. And I expect that assist number especially to kind of take a leap up, because he will be one of the primary playmakers with Gordon Hayward out to start the season. And I also want to see him take just a slight tick up in his three-point percentage. He shot six of them last year at around a 36% clip. If he could get that to 38, that just opens up more space to that offense, especially with the two big men not really able to shoot. But I think he's going to be a big-time player as they continue to move up the Western Conference standings. And your third and final player, Dante, is who?
Yeah, I'm really excited about Clint Capella. As a huge Dwight Howard fan since his being drafted in 2004 or 2005, excuse me, it's been really exciting to see Capella kind of grow under him for his short period of time with Houston. Now that Capella is really the only center there, although Nene signed this offseason, he's going to get the chance to really play with a great player and a possible MVP candidate in Harden, as well as a ultra fast, super modern offense in Houston and being led by Mike D'Antoni. So I think he's going to get a lot of opportunities to score, perhaps not in necessarily the most conventional ways, but on putbacks, on pick and rolls, and on just general drives from the elbow. I think Clint Capella is going to be someone that's going to take a big leap forward this year.
Yeah, and I think he certainly gets helped with the Ryan Anderson acquisition. Him and Harden in the pick and roll, diving down with Anderson creating space, should certainly be dynamic with D'Antoni and company. My third guy is D'Angelo Russell, the second-year point guard out of the Ohio State, as they say. I expect him to really be on the top of people's minds when they think about the Lakers this year. He was steadily getting better last year. Not everyone got to witness it just because they weren't good and it was the Kobe show. But he kind of has the keys to the offense fully without Kobe there. And I've liked what I've seen from him this preseason, as we talked about in the Pacific preview, especially in that Nuggets game in which he went off. I think him leading that young core of Randall and him and Ingram should be interesting, and young coach Luke Walton kind of trying to fit all the pieces together. I think he's going to be able to lead the way effectively. And our second 3x3 question, what are your most intriguing storylines going into this NBA season? We've touched on plenty of them throughout the previews, but whichever ones you think deserve a little bit more time, let's hear what you're thinking, Dante.
Well, something we were able to do that I was pretty surprised about during our previews for each division was not say the word super team as many times as people probably would have expected us to. And as the trend has continued to arise, and maybe it's just telling of the increased level of talent in the NBA, the super team has kind of taken over a lot of the dominant space in the league. And now with the super lineup of death, or whatever you want to call it, in Golden State, I think there's a lot of talk about how to go about breaking these teams down. And a lot of it starts with really good coaching and really good game planning. But I think it's going to be interesting to see how anyone decides and how creative they get to try to take down this Golden State offense.
Yeah, that's kind of been the prevailing theme, I think, throughout this like preseason part. If you go to pretty much any basketball writing website, I think you'll find a piece about that somewhere up there. The first one I wanted to touch on was just how the Hawks kind of rebuild with Coach Bud. He's known as a very excellent coach. In that heated battle 2 years ago with Steve Kerr for the Coach of the Year. And now he loses two of his key cogs in Jeff Teague and Al Horford, and he replaces them with Schroeder and Dwight Howard. So I'm interested to see how he fits that in, because previously the Hawks had just been reliant on spacing the floor as much as possible with their two big men, and just being very efficient in the way they play. And with Howard, he's a different kind of player. He'll certainly help their rebounding and rim protection, which has been lacking. But I'm curious to see how the offense flows without their two more consistent offensive players. What's your next intriguing storyline, Dante?
I guess somewhat to break off of what I was just talking about in a little different of a light, it's focusing mostly on defense and how defense can win championships in this league. If you look at last year's top five, of course you'll find the champion there in Cleveland. He only gave up 98.3 points a game, but a lot of the dominant teams play extraordinarily great defense. And while this isn't exactly a surprise, I think it's important to note, especially in a time of super sound offense in the West at least, that defense should be the driving force for some teams to combat this new style of play. So a team like Utah very much has a chance if they are able to, in some ways, improve through one of your guys, Rodney Hood. Because of their defense, they're going to be able to at least play for a championship at that level.
Yeah. The defense, even in a place like Golden State, just kind of combining your 2 points together is going to be interesting. They don't have a conventional rim protector, but Draymond Green and Kevin Durant are actually sneakily good rim protectors, and I think that's going to be a key part of whether the Warriors can kind of reach their full potential, which might not even matter. They might still win the championship even if they're not able to. And my second storyline I wanted to touch on is just the Knicks in general. I feel like we could probably do this every year, and the Knicks would always come to the top of people's minds, just because people kind of always have hot takes on them. And this year is no different. They bring in Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, Courtney Lee, as previously mentioned. And I'm curious to see how they all blend together. Derrick Rose has missed the last few weeks of play with his civil lawsuit, and how that's all worked out. So whether he comes back in full form will be interesting. And just how all these kind of bigger names fit together along with Kristaps and Melo. So I think Hornacek has a job on his hands to get it done, and I'm curious to see how they're able to do it as they're in the first game tomorrow against Cleveland during the ring ceremony.
Yeah, I like to think they have a lot of misfit toys being put together this year, and it seems like so far the storylines have been all pretty mundane and pretty calm on that front, aside from Derrick Rose and all the problems he's been having, but he's another case unto himself. So I'm definitely interested in, I guess, it's hard not to be when you have someone like Melo and especially someone like KP for some reason has so easily blended into American culture.
All right. What is your third intriguing storyline, Dante?
I think one of the cooler parts about moving towards modern technology is that we're getting so many different ways to view the NBA. And I guess one of the more intriguing storylines for me going into this season is the even more increased number of ways to watch these games. Today, there is a report that came out that League Pass will be showing a certain camera angle as to how you view from your mobile device. So now you'll be able to view it at a much closer angle than perhaps feeling like you're watching the game from the nosebleeds. This is all coming after a couple days ago when NextVR and the NBA announced their partnership to allow people to watch 20 games from a VR headset, obviously at a price, but nevertheless, the continued experience and immersion of the NBA and their games has only gotten better and will only continue to get better. And I'm definitely excited about how they keep taking it to the next level and perhaps how that changes the way we negotiate the CBA going forward. Even though that seems like that's almost a sure lock at this point.
Yeah, and I think the NBA seems like they're at the forefront of all this technology and just innovation more than any of the other professional sports in my eyes. My third and final intriguing storyline, I think this is actually the one I'm most interested in, is kind of how many bad coaches really are there in the NBA. We went through this preview of all 30 teams, and consistently we're like, wow, this division is full of good coaches. And really the only ones we have questions are some of the new ones, like Kenny Atkinson maybe in Brooklyn, but you've heard good things from him. Literally everywhere you look, you see some quality coaches. Chicago might be a place you look and see maybe not a high caliber coach. Washington with Scott Brooks doesn't have rave reviews. You don't see too many. Maybe even one that you could mention is Cleveland with Tyronn Lue. He has the added benefit of kind of being a co-head coach along with LeBron. And then the one that I'm kind of completely not sure of is Earl Watson with the Suns. But overall, there aren't too many bad coaches, and I'm just kind of speculating on who I do think are the bad coaches in this league.
Yeah, I guess you have to wonder, have people figured out how to coach this game? It's kind of weird, right? I mean, I guess we'll see this year. We get to see a couple of new coaches, Watson included, and Fizdale in Memphis. But it really seems like we have gotten to the point where so much is available to these coaches in terms of game planning and strategy that they have really no issue in just easily transitioning into a head coaching role.
Yeah, ranking the top 10 coaches would certainly be a difficult exercise, I believe.
Yeah.
And our final 3x3 question is, what are the three games you are most interested in? Maybe not most interested, most intrigued. I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. For this opening week of the season, Tuesday to Sunday. What is your first one, Dante? Or you can just rattle through all three and then we can just kind of...
Yeah, definitely. So the first one right off the bat is going to be tomorrow night's showdown between San Antonio and Golden State. I totally expect both these teams to be at the very least contention for the title, if not certainly one of them. But obviously, there's a lot at stake here for the first night of the NBA season. Cavs and Raptors play in Toronto on the 28th. Obviously, just getting to see LeBron play in Toronto and against what is hopefully a title contender. I think the window is really closing for Toronto, so getting to see them in action early is going to be cool. And then finally, a team that I have a lot of hope for against a team that I had a lot of hope for, Utah playing against the Clippers on the 30th. I think it's going to be a showdown of two different styles, and one will eventually win out, and I think it's going to be Utah.
Those are probably three of the most high profile, and if you want to watch playoff basketball, those are kind of the three you want to go to, for sure. And I'll certainly try and tune in for all of them. My three, I kind of went a little bit more under the radar, maybe not so much. The first one I wanted to spotlight it's on ESPN tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern. The Oklahoma City travel to Philadelphia in the first Westbrook Sans Durant game. And then we'll also get to see Embiid, Saric for the first time. So I like new things, kind of, and this certainly spotlights them. Next, in that exact same window, actually, the Timberwolves against the Grizzlies. I want to see if this Timberwolves team really is a playoff team and whether Thibodeau can kind of get the most out of them. And with the Grizzlies, of course, bringing in Chandler Parsons and whether they're able to stay healthy with Gasol and Conley. And finally, on Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern, I'm looking forward to seeing the Celtics and the Bulls. The Bulls, as we've talked about, is just a mishmash of misfit toys, as you talked about, with the other team. And then the Celtics with Al Horford, I expect them to be one of the best defensive teams in the league, and I think this could present a good opportunity for them to give kind of a blueprint to the rest of the league for stopping the Bulls.
Hey, one of my guys was all of the 76ers, basically. So let's give me that, at least, outside of my playoff hopeful games.
Very true. We're going to move on to who we think our eight playoff teams in each conference are. For our power rankings of the other seven teams that don't make the playoffs, you can head to Last Word on Pro Basketball in the article for this piece, and you can see where we rank those teams, but we just wanted to spotlight who we think is going to make the playoffs. And let's begin out east. Let's hear your top four to start out in the east.
So I think there could be a little bit after Cleveland in terms of discussion, but Cleveland's got to be your number one. After that, I'm going Boston. I'm really hopeful, and like you said, they're top defensive team in this league. And then three, Toronto, followed by Indiana, who I'm also very hopeful for in terms of their improvement and PG's continued progression.
I have the same top three. In the fourth spot, I actually have Charlotte just because Steve Clifford is awesome. MKG is awesome. Once again, Clifford is awesome. Who's your 5 through 8?
Yeah, to be fair, I have Charlotte right there, and I'm sure they'll contend for that fourth spot. But after Charlotte at the 5 spot, I have Washington, then Atlanta, and Detroit to round out my top 8.
It's interesting that you got Washington a little higher than I am. 5, I have Indiana, and then Atlanta, and then Detroit, and then Washington. I had very high hopes for the Wizards going to last season, and they kind of let me down, so I'm not ready to buy in quite yet. But with John Wall at the helm, they're certainly very capable.
Look, I'm a fan of regular season Scott Brooks coaching. I'm not as much of a fan of him bringing a team into a road playoff game, but the very least, he gets his players to play hard throughout the regular season, and I think having a full season of Wall and Beal will hopefully and also a more empty front court open up some driving lanes for those two. So I'm hopeful for that team.
Something that I want to bring up about Brooks is that I feel like most of the criticism stemmed from his lack of kind of offensive ingenuity, almost like how everyone always wanted him to run this motion system, and especially when the Warriors come in and just completely revolutionize the game, and he continues to rely on this KD Westbrook ISO. Well, he doesn't have those two high quality players. Wall can certainly get himself a bucket sometimes, but not quite as consistently as those two. So I think he will be able to bring a little bit more than we saw in Oklahoma City, and I think he'll be able to hold his own for sure. The other thing that I wanted to mention is Washington and the Knicks. I actually had a very, very tough time deciding who would be the 8th seed. I think I'm believing in the Knicks a little bit too much. I think I'm thinking about their ceiling more than their floor. But I think if things work right for New York, they could be a very dynamic Eastern Conference team. Were there any close calls for you in terms of the playoff race in the East?
Yeah, I guess just having Chicago and Milwaukee around. I think Chicago, although they're really a weird setup and perhaps schematically confused, I think that they both Chicago and Milwaukee will contend at least for the 8th spot. Though I do think Sam Van Gundy has a stronghold over that Detroit organization. I'm not sure they have the definitive talent to secure a spot for sure in the Eastern Conference playoffs.
And the injury to Reggie Jackson for the first bit of the season could hamper them for sure.
Yeah.
Ish Smith isn't quite the player that Reggie Jackson is, sadly.
Unfortunately.
And let's move on to the Western Conference. You don't even have to tell me who your 1 seed is. I know it's Phoenix. We can just move on. Who's your 2 seed?
Yeah, after Phoenix, it's San Antonio. Well, of course, it's going to be Golden State at first. Let's just make sure everybody knows we're on the same page here. San Antonio is going to be number 2. I have the Clippers at 3, and I think it's going to be closer than years past, perhaps. And then Utah at my 4.
Interesting. I actually have the Clippers at number 2. I just think they're so good when they're healthy. The offense just flows so well. Obviously, I feel like I'm kind of undervaluing the Spurs, which tends to happen a lot. But I just have some concerns with their lack of speed on their starting unit with Tony Parker and Pau Gasol in pick and rolls. Danny Green's a little bit banged up. Just some question marks. And then 4, I do have Utah.
Yeah, I guess after I do think that the Clippers are great, but if you're running back the same roster year after year, it does become a concern at some point. I just don't know what would get them over the proverbial hump that they've so far have had trouble getting over in years past, at least for that number 2 spot.
Yeah, I don't have an answer for you with that one, but I just like what they do have, I guess. And who are your final 4 Western Conference playoff teams?
I think Houston is going to be really close there at number 5, followed by Memphis, who I think gets a bump for picking up Chandler Parsons and moving to a more modern offense under Fizdale. OKC is going to make the playoffs for me. I have them at 7, and Portland's going to round out my top 8. They're just going to sneak in.
Wow, we are on the same page here. I just have Portland at 7 and Oklahoma City at 8. I thought I'd be higher on Houston. I'm extremely excited about their offense. If the first question of our 3x3 was who are my teams, Houston would certainly be in there because I'm I'm falling in love just because, I guess, who needs defense?
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm on the same page there. I guess if I had to give a reason to rank Portland over OKC, it would just be what we saw from them last year. And we haven't really seen a team led just by Westbrook have too much success, although I think he'll be able to hold his own and he has some good pieces around him.
In fairness, I think that I give OKC a bump here. I think Portland takes a step back. I don't know if what they have there is sustainable. I think Evan Turner is a good addition. I think they're a little bit too reliant on the mid-range game that Evan Turner will tell you he loves. But OKC has a guy named Steven Adams that I've truly, truly fallen in love with, and I think he is going to really dominate this league as a modern big man. So they get the bump there because Angry Russ is a better Russ. So
just to kind of add on your point, is there have been reports out of Portland that Evan Turner kind of isn't getting along with everything in Portland at the moment. So if that has any impact. And then also with your Steven Adams thing, I don't know if you've read this yet, but I saw today that Danny Chow wrote something about Steven Adams up on the Ringer.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to, but I'm imagining it saying similar sentiments. Yeah, he had an incredible playoffs, turned it into an incredible summer of just making his name known, and now he's really going to get a chance to star in an offense that isn't just surrounded by two of the top offensive players now. It's just one, and he's going to get a chance to prove himself as a year-round player, not just necessarily a couple of rounds in the playoffs.
Yeah, and if you had probably asked me in like mid-March about Steven Adams, I probably would have compared him to like just Robin Lopez, and then he just comes out of nowhere, and people are talking about him as like a top four center in this league, and it's certainly warranted, and he's certainly looks the part. So it'll be interesting to see whether we see it for the entire season. Next up, who's your top five for the NBA MVP? I had a very tough time narrowing down to five. Probably a top 12 would have gotten everyone, I think, has a chance of winning it.
Yeah, that's true. And I think this speaks to what we talked about earlier about the rise in talent just around the NBA. It's just crazy how good how many individual players are. But I'm pretty surprised at myself. I don't have any international players in this top five. But my number one is going to be Kawhi Leonard. I think he's going to win it this year, really take a bigger role in the offense after having LaMarcus Aldridge and Pau Gasol settle in and play around him. James Harden at my number two is just really him there in Houston leading that offense. He's going to get a lot of chances. Angry Russ at number three. And then to close it out, LeBron and Paul George at four and five.
I led it off with James Harden. I think if Houston wants to get around a five seed or so, I think he'll have to be that good. Number two is LeBron. I think people kind of re-realized how really, really, really good he was during that playoff stint. Number three and four, I didn't know who I think would be better out of the Golden State duo, so I put them both there because I think they'll both kind of cannibalize themselves. And I can't see Curry winning a third MVP unless he does something even more insane than what he's already done. And fifth, I have Chris Paul. And I think he'll need to do that if the Clippers want to leap the Spurs in the standings. And he's just really good and kind of gets underappreciated sometimes just because he's been there for so long. But not having Kawhi, not having Westbrook, not having Paul George, not having Anthony Davis, were all very tough decisions that we kind of had to make at some point. And finally, as we end our preseason previews, who do you think is going to make it to each of the conference finals and ultimately win the championship?
So I think for the conference finals, I honestly, at this point, there isn't as much parity in the NBA. I suppose last year we got pretty close with the Thunder taking down San Antonio. But at the end of the day, I think the top four talented teams in the league are the top four for a reason. So I'm going to go Golden State and San Antonio, and Golden State's going to win in that matchup. And then on the other side, it's going to be Cleveland and Boston. I think Cleveland's going to have a tough one there because of the way that Boston is coached and the way that they stack up in terms of systems. But Cleveland will win there. And then it's a super team for a reason. And it's, we talked about it as a trend, but this Golden State team is made to win a championship, and they will do that in only five games against Cleveland this year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have too much to add on there. It's kind of the same thing everyone is saying across everywhere. I have Golden State over LA, which I'm just a little higher on LA over San Antonio this year, and then I have the Cavs over Boston as well, and ultimately Golden State winning the championship. It's not going to be. It's going to be more interesting to see how they get there more than what the end result is, but. It should be a very fun NBA season. Are there any other quick things you want to get in so that the people know what you'll be watching for and who to give credit to at the end of the year?
Well, I'm looking for my boy Jeremy Lin to have a huge year for my Brooklyn Nets. Obviously, it's going to be quite the boring year, and this isn't exactly a team you want to put on your league pass radar, but Jeremy Lin has shown moments, especially in big games, that he can really be successful. And after having, another period of time of bouncing around, he settled in with Charlotte, got the chance to reclaim his glory, and got a nice contract that he can play into well with the Brooklyn Nets. So I'm excited a little bit, at least, for this what's going to be a tough season for the Nets.
Yeah, I think him and Lopez, after that, it gets pretty slim. Lin's another guy who people don't realize how good he was last year and how important he was to Charlotte. That's certainly a hole that Coach Clifford's going to have to fill. I think that's all I got. I can't think of anything that I want to get out there just so that I can claim some glory coming out of the year. I guess just Karl Anthony Towns is amazing, but that's nothing new.
No.
yeah, that's about it. Season starts tomorrow with New York. New York against the Cavaliers at 4:30 Pacific, 7:30 Eastern. Golden State, San Antonio, as you said, and then the sneaky game that is on League Pass is Utah Portland. So that might be one of the it might be the most interesting one to me, just because they're a little bit under the radar. But thanks everyone for joining us. You can follow us on Twitter at Coast to Coast Pod. You can find both of our Twitter handles there. Get us over 20 followers, that'd be nice. And we will catch you guys sometime in the next week or so.